like women are sustaining injuries during pregnancy. And if they had MRIs done like months later, you'd find stress fractures, you know, in their pubic bone or in their hips because of the trauma that they went through. And it's crazy.
Welcome to the Runners Connect Run to the Top podcast, where it's all about learning from the best and most inspiring minds in the sport. So together we can train a smarter, healthier, and faster running community. Now, here's your host, Tina Muir.
Hello, this is Tina Muir. Thank you so much for being here with me for the latest episode of the Runners Connect Run to the Top podcast. Now, I'm probably going to surprise you a little, as I did leave you kind of hanging last week when I told you we'd be talking to a unique events group. And we will actually have that episode in the future. I do have it scheduled, but I have to apologize. This is not the order I wanted it to be in, but I did have a death in the family last week. So I actually flew home to England to be with my family. Thankfully, I had recorded this episode before I left, so that's why you're listening to this one right now. I promise this episode is going to be worth your time, especially if you enjoyed the episode with Phoebe Wright a few weeks ago. So today I have a power couple on the show for you, and for all those runner mums and dads, you're going to be incredibly impressed with these two and how they managed to organise their time with the two young kids and just being professional runners and getting it all in. But even if you're not a parent, I learned so much and just kind of got a glance of what life could be like in the future. Although, you know, we never know how we're going to handle it, but they have a lot of great advice for everyone. So today we're talking to Stephanie and Ben Bruce, who you've probably heard of, or maybe Stephanie at least. She was in the spotlight recently showing her post-pregnancy stomach in a, well, let's say a non-traditional sense. She is just so real, and you're going to love that she doesn't pretend everything is perfect when it's not. She's very good friends with Lauren Fleshman, so you know what she is like as well. But she's just not afraid to show her true self, and it's just really refreshing. She's another girl who doesn't mind, you know, sharing what's going on, even if it means opening herself up to some criticism, which you are going to hear about today. So this couple are just amazing with what they've managed to achieve between them. Steph has personal bests of 32:24 in the 10K and all the way up to a 2:29 in the marathon. So that's quite a range there. And Ben has run 7:56 in the 3K and 13:30 in the 5K. So pretty impressive group right there. But at the same time, they're just like you and me, which you're going to learn about today. So after a word from Jabra, we'll get on with the interview. If you're a regular listener, by now you know who sponsors this podcast. Jabra, of course, with their wireless, sweatproof, weatherproof sports earbud that I absolutely love. Remember, you can enter to win a free set every month at jabra.com/runnersconnect. Welcome to the Run to the Top podcast, Steph and Ben.
Thanks. We're excited to be here.
I'm excited to have you, and you know, I want to dive right in here because I'm sure most people are going to just be in awe of your PRs, and especially, you know, you're both elite runners, but having you two of you combined at the top level, you know, it's just amazing. So you're quite the power couple there. But I want to kind of start with how you guys met, and you know, kind of the background of the two of you.
Well, I think Steph likes me telling the story.
Yeah, I'll let Ben do it.
Now, so in 2005, Steph and I actually went to, I guess you could call rival colleges. She went to Santa Barbara, I went to Cal Poly. But we actually didn't know who each other were up until I ran the NCAA championships in 2005. She was brought up there with a couple of her guys from her team that were just coming to watch. And a guy from her team actually said before the steeplechase, said, if Bruce wins it, call me by my last name, we're taking him out. And Stephanie's like, who's this Ben guy? I didn't win the steeplechase. We didn't go out that night, but I'd gotten a text from Steph's phone, which I found out wasn't sent from her. But so we ended up connecting later that summer on the phone, and she actually got a speeding ticket the first time we talked because she must have been so excited. So we talked a little bit on the phone that summer. That was 2005, and then just started making the trip back and forth between Santa Barbara and San Luis Obispo, which is about an hour and a half drive. So kind of weekends in the beginning, and then that kind of started it. And then after she graduated college, Steph moved to Eugene, and then I eventually moved to Eugene, and then a couple of years there, then Steph moved to Flagstaff, and then I moved out to Flagstaff, and I kind of thought that was probably the last time I would chase her to another city. Decided to just get engaged then, and we got married in 2012, and now have two boys, one born in 2014 and one born just last year in 2015. So that's the story in a nutshell.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's great. And we're going to go into, you know, your two boys and how close together they were in a few minutes. But do you think it made it easier on you both having, you know, being runners, both kind of understanding that drive and having to follow your running? Or do you think that kind of made it more difficult as you both kind of, in a way, wanted to follow your own careers without, you know, kind of messing up your relationship?
It was easy when we were together, truthfully, because like we live the same lifestyle, going to bed early, just wanting to like go see movies and hang out and recover. But like Ben mentioned, since we did long distance for so many years in a relationship, that part was difficult because neither of us kind of wanted to give up what we were pursuing. Mm-hmm. So I was trying to find, you know, the right group and coach for me when I graduated, but Ben was having success with his college coach, and it was right before the Olympic trials in 2008. So he didn't want to change, which is understandable. But I kind of wanted a clean slate. And then the same thing happened. Once he moved up to Eugene, he had a great group with the Oregon Track Club and Mark Rowland. And I was struggling a little bit. And that's where I found a new situation out in Flagstaff. So that's where it made it difficult because neither one of us wanted to necessarily give up on our running careers, but we wanted to be together. So it just kept us apart, I think, for a couple more years. But probably respecting that the other person had that goal and understanding it made it easier for us to stay together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was kind of tough. Like both when Seth moved to Eugene and then you moved from Eugene to Flagstaff, like I tend to go wherever and sort of take whatever my surroundings are and accept them and make the best of them. And Steph, like she said, and Eugene was struggling from her running standpoint, which was mostly in turn because she was finding out at the time about celiac and all these food allergies, which were leading to her running not going well. So it kind of seemed like once I got settled in a spot, she would move. And I understood her desire and her need to move because when you're not happy, when you're not, things aren't going well, you're not going to train well, you're not going to race well. So you always have to be happy to race well, regardless of what the training is. So when she moved out to Flagstaff, it was tough, but then eventually that kind of became unhappy for me living in Eugene for some other reasons and us being, you know, always being apart and not seeing each other as much. So, now we're in Flagstaff and eventually kind of all worked out. So yeah, there's good and bad. We definitely understand the running aspect, but then sometimes, it makes things a little bit more difficult when one person needs to make like a big change. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. But I'm sure in some ways it keeps you kind of balanced because, you know, you both have your running careers, but then you kind of realize that at the end of the day, your relationship with one another is more important. And, you know, you want to be together primarily, and it probably keeps you somewhat in the right mindset. And especially now with your family, you know, having the two boys, that helps even more so. Would you agree, or am I completely off there?
No, it absolutely does. Because like as you get further in a relationship too, you have like your own goals and, you know, you're looking for your success. But at the end of the day, you also want those goals and that success for your spouse, your significant other. Mm-hmm. So you almost have a dual investment. So you kind of have to be like, well, how can I make their goals possible? And Ben has always been really great at doing that. Hopefully I've been just as good for him, but I know he's created that in our family and in my relationship.
Yeah,
definitely. When before we had kids, you could just travel or go race, or I could go to Europe and kick around for 3 or 4 weeks, and I'd maybe be away from Stephanie, but I also wasn't leaving her with two kids to take care of. So we really try to balance that, and so we have to pick our races more sparingly now, and like Steph said, sort of trade off the workload. But it does balance everything because you almost in the morning sometimes don't have time to think about like how hard the workout's going to be because you're trying to like get diapers changed, bottles fed, and like get the kids off to like maybe a babysitter or daycare before you go. And you're 5 minutes before the workout, you're realizing like, whoa, this is a big tester. Like, I hope I have my racing flats. Okay, good. Then I'll be all right. So yeah, it definitely balances everything out.
Yeah, no, I think that's good to hear. And even for me listening, it's a good reminder that, you know, even yesterday I did a hard workout and before I started, I said, oh, I'm really nervous. And my husband, who's also my coach, was kind of like, why are you nervous? Like, this doesn't mean anything. But that what you just said kind of puts it in perspective when you think about all the other things that could be going on in your life. So something that I think maybe others can kind of understand if they are in a couple that, you know, both of them run either one level or the other. Do the two of you ever struggle with, you know, I don't know about getting competitive, like who could be better at their level, but like when one of you is doing really well and the other one's struggling, you know, obviously in particular, I'm thinking, Steph, of when you were pregnant or other times, is it difficult to kind of be that supportive person without taking out your own frustrations on your spouse?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously difficult. Like you mentioned, I probably had to do it a little more simply because of the pregnancies, and I've also had more injuries in my career than Ben has. But then as soon as I would really like get to that most frustrated state, you always have to pull back and be like, well, it's not Ben's fault. Well, the pregnancy was. No. but like, obviously those were choices. We both wanted that. So it's never your significant other's fault, but because they're the closest person to you and the person you love so much, unfortunately that's you always take things out on, which is a terrible thing. And marriages end because of that. And it's really sad. You just have to remember like, their happiness has to essentially sometimes come before yours. And Ben has always done a great job of that. So anytime I'm thinking that I want to be frustrated and because of a situation, I just think, well, Ben would never do that to me or let that happen. So I try to catch it before it comes. So I've probably had a couple more of those experiences over the years. But yeah, if they're your significant other and you care more about their happiness and success, you know, why would you want ill will towards them if they're running well or if they're, you know, achieving their goals?
Yeah, I mean, if I had a choice, I'd much rather have Steph injury-free and racing well than myself, because I feel she's dealt with a lot more. She's taken time off to have the kids, where I've kind of had a very, like, injury-free career, and I've been pretty consistent. So when I see her go through ups and downs, like, part of me feels, it's not jealousy, I almost feel bad when she keeps having hiccups or like things that come along. So I also know that unfortunately the mood of someone that's racing and healthy is going to be a lot better than a mood of someone that's dealing with injuries or dealing with like whatever reason they can't run. So for me in a relationship, I would take myself not being able to run over Steph not being able to run, because I think I can just sort of handle it with my own self. I'm usually a bit more quiet if I'm hurt or something. I just kind of keep things inside until I'm running again, and then that's kind of how it is, where Steph likes to express how she's feeling a lot more. If she's out running road races and running really fast and bringing in the money, I'll sit home and watch the kids, no problem. So.
It's okay. I know I do the same thing. I definitely have had, I've talked quite publicly about how many meltdowns I've had and lost it at my husband without meaning to, just frustration. I'm guessing it probably is also, you know, you're hurting for them, you know, when your significant other is hurting, you know, you're kind of going through that pain yourself because you're so connected on that level. So, you know, obviously not fun for anyone, but that was great advice from both of you. So thanks for sharing that. And, so Ben, you mentioned that you've had a pretty, you know, consistent and successful career overall. And you know, maybe this isn't the case, I don't know, but it still says on your website that you love to race, and you mentioned earlier that you've kind of had to scale that back a little bit. But I was just curious, what is it about racing that is just, you know, so you're so passionate about?
Yeah, I think just for myself, racing a lot almost has led, I think, to less injuries. And now that could be very hard for some people, because I've over the years used a lot of like races aren't necessarily in my sweet spot, I'll go do like a trail race that doesn't necessarily something I train for to sort of break up the training. And if I just have like 4 months of training with no races, I tend to get stale in the training. I'm not a person to put like huge workouts out there. Mm-hmm. Plenty of people that I race with on race day or compete with probably do like workouts that are more impressive on paper, but I like to put in maybe like a 10K road race in the build up to a race to just give myself as like, that's the hard effort. And something on the calendar to give me something to look forward to, so I can get through 4 weeks of training if I know that then in 4 weeks I'm going to have a race, and then I can go 4 more weeks of training in the race, and then maybe 3 weeks after that is like the goal race. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I've just kind of love to travel and race. And like I said, the kids make that a little bit more limited, but I still find ways to try to get places here and there, just make the trips a lot shorter than they used to be. So.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And actually before the interview went, I was talking to Ben and Steph about, Ben and I both raced the World Half Marathon in Cardiff a few months ago. And just something that occurred to me, a question I could ask you both. I don't know who wants to answer this, as a lot of our listeners are probably curious about, but I've never actually asked any of the elites about it. But can you kind of describe what a situation like that would involve, like, you know, flying out, you stay for a few days, you know, obviously most people don't think about it, but we just mostly see the inside of a hotel room. It's not like you're out exploring all the time, but maybe if one of you could kind of share what traveling to a race involves.
I'll use the World Half in Cardiff as a good example, because that's obviously a lot farther of a travel, mm-hmm. Staying somewhere domestically. For myself, since now I could, having the kids, usually I would have gone out as early as I could have and stayed as late as I could have just to take the most of the trip. But I actually left a day later than normal. So I got to the race 2 days before because it wasn't international travel. And then I usually use my shakeout runs or my little kind of easy runs and strides the day before the race to explore wherever I am. If I go out and walk 3 or 4 miles around the town, I feel exhausted, mm-hmm. but I can go jog 3 or 4 miles as like a pre-meet. Shake out the day before and not feel exhausted and maybe take my phone with me and stop and take a few pictures. Cardiff's a great example because there's a lot to see around the hotel. You can be running around castles and through parks and stuff right away. So that was enough for me to see in the area. So I tend to use the runs before the race to do that. And then yeah, once the race is over, travel and just get on the plane and get on back home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, if I could add, essentially, since it's our job, it is a business trip. So it's not as like glamorous sometimes as it might look. But when you think about it, like for me, I would rather go there, be inside a hotel room, not necessarily see the things, but have like the experience of the race and be like, this is what like we work towards. And this is like, it's not your vacation, but the race is like the reward kind of. So it doesn't feel as like, pigeonholed as a business trip, you know, like someone at a business trip is like, cool, I have to go to that meeting or that conference, but like the race is a fun part for us. Yes. And if you have a few hours after, you can enjoy. Otherwise, maybe going to Cardiff, maybe Ben's like, hey, we should go there with the family in a couple years. Like, so you at least got to see that place that you raced at. And so then maybe that becomes like a vacation spot later in your life.
And we've even done some trips even with the boys where before Hudson was born, I ran Falmouth 1 year right after Riley was born. And we stayed a couple of days after. It's nice. They do host families at that race. So we've become good friends with the host family because I've run there several years. And so, yeah, we stayed a couple of days after and sort of just explored the surrounding area. So get the business part of the trip done and then take a day or two if you can just to view the area.
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly what I did in Amsterdam for the Euros a few weeks ago. And anyone listening, I would recommend kind of almost seeing this as the same way, especially if you are traveling to a faraway race, you know, do the same thing, kind of keep it minimal in the few days before, but then maybe book your flight back a few days later. And it's probably a little bit cheaper then too, because, you know, you're not going back when everyone is going back. So, all right, well, that was just something, a little side note there, but I thought that would be something interesting to explore. So I did have Sarah Brown on the podcast a few weeks ago, and Steph, you have been on in the past, but I thought there'd be some questions I could kind of go off with this. You have been, you know, it's been quite well documented, both of your lives, for showing, you know, the real side of pregnancy, I guess. You've not exactly hidden your, you know, your journey since coming back from pregnancy and showing about, you know, how the body reacts and how you feel. But do you have any thoughts first on why others are so afraid to kind of show this side of themselves, and why do you think it's just the media, or is there a reason why we're kind of scared to kind of show what we're really going through, and especially mothers?
Yeah, it's embarrassing. I mean, there's nothing like that's very glamorous or pretty. Part of pregnancy, yes, like you have the beautiful pregnancy glow the first couple months and you're bringing a life into this world. But every other part of it, you know, people don't, even just during the pregnancy, like the gas that you have or how much burping you do because you have indigestion. Like you just don't talk about that as much. And maybe as females, because in society we are brought up a little more dainty, you know, like if a guy burps and farts, it's super funny or like your kids really laugh.
But yeah, if daddy farts.
Yeah, but if mom does it, it's like, that's gross, you know, and that is a societal thing and that's history. Women wore corsets. You know, there were just so many things in history that made it so women shouldn't really talk about those things or maybe be unfeminine. And somewhere along the lines, I feel like pregnancy and postpartum, even though it's the most feminine thing a woman can go through, it became kind of like, let's keep it behind closed doors. And I don't know whose fault that was. Even OBGYNs, not to their fault, but I always talk about there's the 6 weeks postpartum checkup and they do a speculum check and there's a couple things done and then they're like, you're good to go. But what does your good to go mean? Mm-hmm. I was just recently reading some of these articles that were released on how like women are sustaining injuries during pregnancy. And if they had MRIs done like months later, you'd find stress fractures, you know, in their pubic bone or in their hips because of the trauma that they went through. And it's crazy. Like women who aren't either full-time athletes or athletes, like they don't know they have that. So they just have this pain and then there's no really other person to go see. So they just get like a little check mark at 6 weeks, either because you stop bleeding or there's no more tearing and then they're out on their own. Mm-hmm. So I guess I was just inspired to, I don't know, share a little bit of what it's been like to be out on my own, but I'm fortunate that I have other people and resources to help me since I was trying to get back to, you know, high level competition. But aside from like my physical ability as an athlete, I was still a woman who went through, you know, a natural but very traumatic event. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, it was very inspiring to see. And I know you had, you know, a huge amount of people that kind of stood behind you and kind of thanked you for what you did and for sharing, you know, this. And there's a lot of things that you kind of mentioned about that I'm sure a lot of women listening or, you know, spouses of women were kind of thinking about and thinking maybe they were the only ones. So it was great to see. But do you have any thoughts on what we can kind of do to change this in the future? Is it just kind of people like you being brave enough to kind of show it? Or is this something that has to be kind of changed right at the top with like the OBGYNs and things like that?
Yeah, I'm working on that. And that's been part of my like, you know, post-Olympic trials, like not getting back fully into my running quite 100% yet, because I'm trying to dissect all the things that happened this spring and trying to connect and get back to all the women that reached out and contacted me, because it's been quite a overhaul and quite a bit of women, and I want to help every single one of them, which I know I can't do. But I don't know, because you know, OBGYNs, they obviously go through schooling for what they're supposed to do, and they've been taking care of women and delivering babies, and that's all been wonderful. But there's kind of just there's no like transitional doctor. I don't even know what title you would give them, because I don't know if you can send a woman right to physical therapy, because I don't even know what physical therapy that needs. I don't know if there's a postnatal physical therapy we can call them, right? There's a couple women that have reached out to me that are postnatal fitness instructors. So there's becoming more certification. I'm in that area. There just isn't someone like, oh, you just search in your area and you would find a postnatal therapist. I don't think mm-hmm. that exists right now. So maybe we need more of that. We need more of that post 6 weeks up to a year or 2 years after birth for women to go see. And the tough part is that though, like how is that going to be covered? Is that out of pocket? Well, health insurance. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that should be something that is extended into a woman's pregnancy and postnatal healthcare package. But that's going to be hard to justify probably for a while until more comes out. So yes, maybe it does take more women to be, I don't know if I'd call myself brave. I was just kind of, I don't know. I was just honest, I guess. I learned that a lot from one of my best friends, Lauren Fleshman, that you just kind of have to keep it real. And I found out how much that resonated with so many women, but yeah, we have a long way to go. And yeah. I wish I had the exact steps on what to take. So I'm trying to map that out a little bit.
Yeah. And you and Lauren, you know, definitely leading the charge with this. And it really has been great to see. And anyone listening who hasn't seen, you know, what both Steph and Lauren have been doing, I will put links in the show notes, but definitely worth checking out. Ben, would you say there's anything that men go through with, you know, we always talk about body image and, you know, things that women go through, but is there anything, you know, image related that you think is even comparable with men, or as you've kind of seen the inside of this through, you know, what Steph's been going through, would you say that it's just, or primarily a women's thing?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think men have anything particular in their life where all of a sudden they're like, wow, naturally, like body image now goes. I mean, men, they just slowly age for the most part. I think it's an experience to see my wife go through it and just kind of get more of a look into what goes on. And there's a fine line because you also don't need to share every single thing with every single person. But so there is a point where once you are pregnant or once you've had the baby that the people that are close to what's going on see what's going on. And I think that there's forums for that to share. And it's not like Steph's putting completely inappropriate stuff online or on Instagram. She's just sharing things that are totally normal for a lot of women that they go through. I would just say from like a guy's perspective that some of like with anything you put online, some people are going to make bad comments. And most of the comments she got are positive because it's a lot of other women that are experiencing similar things. But then some comments are like, I don't want to see that. Or like what, you know, they think she's trying to like become like a celebrity by putting this stuff up, and which is completely false from what today's social media puts out. The celebrities are the airbrushed and not real body images that end there. And for all the guys or even some women that put comments up that are pretty negative, I would just want to like talk to their mom and make sure their mom knew that their kid was making these comments, because I'm sure that their mom would probably slap them upside the head and say,
yeah,
you're the reason. And then maybe their mom would show them their stomach or some scars if they had a C-section or something that they went through and say, you know, everyone comes in this world. It's not easy. And so kind of thank your mom for all that, I guess.
No, that's a good way of looking at it. And how did you kind of handle that? I mean, Steph, I'll ask you in a minute, but Ben, that must have been pretty hard when you did see things like that, not to, you know, really get angry and kind of, you know, want to like, you know, get into an argument with these people who are just, you know, have no credit behind what they're saying. They're just being, you know, rude. And as an elite, you kind of expect that a little bit, but it must have been difficult knowing that this was such a personal issue and, you know, Steph was being brave, even if you won't say you were being brave.
Yeah, honestly, what I reminded Steph, because I take them very casually, because, and I know that maybe Steph in the beginning took her a little bit of hurtful from some of it, but I always say anything online, if 1,000 people look at it, if 990 people like it, maybe only a couple of them make a comment that's positive. But if 10 people of 1,000 really hate it, they're usually, unfortunately, the ones that are more like a harsh comment. And it's just kind of, so if you read it and if 3 of 10 comments are bad, you're like, wow, most of these people are like thinking this is, they don't like it. But I just think most people that make the comments behind the message board or like behind the screen, maybe they're like not as happy in their own life,
yeah,
or something.
Absolutely.
And they're trying to tear other people down, where if someone could love the post and just think about the post and take that into their life, but they might not necessarily make a comment. And so I think that's kind of it. And I think people that follow Steph or any woman out there that's kind of putting stuff out there, generally, if someone makes a comment that's harsh enough, the people that love the person are going to come to their defense anyway. So I always just remind Steph to just let it be. You have a lot more to lose by fighting back to them, because they're almost like, there's a lot of people online now that like search. They're like searching for a fight, kind of. They're
like trolls.
They want you to comment back. They want you to get fired up. And everyone can, they can type what they want. They can have an opinion, but I think you just have to let it go and focus on the good comments.
Yeah. I had one great example that happened. So like, it was after, I was leading up to the trial, sharing a workout and like telling them kind of what had gone on and some struggles I was having. And then I like said my times, and one person was like, hey, just so you know, like we're all out there working hard, running, like you don't have to share it like you're bragging about what you do. And I just wrote back, I'm like, really, I'm sorry that you felt that way. Like, my intention is never to brag. I just, a lot of people are interested in the paces that I'm doing different stuff. And then literally it was like 50 women just like went off on that person. I was like, okay, I don't even need to say anything. You know, it was so cool. Someone was like, no, please keep posting that. Someone was like, do not ever say that to her again. Insane. Us mortals want to know. So it was really cool. And as Ben showed, like, you don't need to say anything because other people kind of fight the battles for you. And yeah. So that was a super cool testimony to a lot of my fans.
Yeah. In the social media world, we call that a tribe. You have your own tribe. So
I was like, ooh, I almost felt bad. Person and the person was like, ooh, sorry I said anything.
That's funny. I've actually had a similar experience with someone who was criticizing my form, and then all these people like jumped on and said, oh, don't you dare insult her form. So yeah, it's cool when that happens. And thank you to anyone who does jump to support those people who are, you know, kind of putting themselves out there. So then what would you like to tell runners who may kind of like have their own insecurities about themselves and kind of feel, you know, tend to focus on their negatives of their body? And what would you like to say about kind of accepting who you are and where you are at this current moment?
Yeah, you know, I had a lot of my running inspiration in my career, honestly, is attributed to Lauren, like I said, Lauren Fleshman, because before I really got going, she was coming off one of the most decorated collegiate runners of history and into her pro career. And so I was just like picking her brain about everything. And she said the biggest thing she learned is, one, don't compare yourself to other runners, because one, we all have different body types. We all can get it done, differently. Like Lauren always said, we're like, at our prime, we were like 23 pounds a difference in weight, yet I could never like run in step with her in a 5K and she couldn't run with me in a marathon. So it was just so great how we had two different distances and our body types were so different. She said, never compare yourself to other runners, and then never compare yourself to yourself. And I think that one's the hardest thing to learn, because what you do is you compare. You're in 2016, but you compare to your 2015 season and the runner you were then, or the runner that you were 5 months ago, you know? So the hardest thing is just being now and present and working with the body and the runner you are kind of in this very moment. I'm still learning that, you know, it's taken me a few years, but because you like to look back at when you were successful and when you weren't successful. But yeah, if you can just try to be present and not doing too much comparison.
Yeah, kind of along what Steph's saying, I think people tend to look at the bad days of the training more than the good days. And one of the biggest things I've done in my career, I think, that's helped my longevity and consistency is really just letting like a bad workout go. Not like saying you let it go, but just, yeah, it just was like a bad day, or like even cutting a bad day short because you know you're like starting to do more damage. Now, if you start having 3 out of 4 workouts go bad, you need to maybe adjust what's going on in training. But if you run 8 or 9 good workouts and then you have a bad one, you're probably training at the right level because maybe you just got a little bit tired. But if a lot of times runners will dwell on that one bad workout, and they had 8 great workouts before that happened. So the numbers on that, once again, are pretty good. So take a look at some of the good days and appreciate those. And then when you have a bad day, or you have like even just like an easy run that just is bad, like, just go home, recover, don't try to make the run up later, don't go out and like party till 2 a.m. because you feel your running career is over, because people think like, oh man, one bad day, like I suck, I'm just going to go get obliterated. Just sort of take it off and then get on with things. So.
Yeah, so true. And a lot of the time, even on those days when you struggle, you're still giving yourself fitness. Like there's still, it's, even though, you know, it may not have gone as well as you wanted to, it's you still giving yourself, you're still running hard, so you're still giving yourself a little boost of fitness. So yeah, great advice on both areas there. Thank you. That's really helpful. So I want to kind of ask you guys to share maybe a day in the life of the Bruces with, your life as a parent with 2 boys who are very close in age, and, you know, both parents trying to chase a running career. So maybe if you could share, I know obviously each day is going to be different depending on what workouts you have, but maybe just one typical day for us.
So the beauty of having 2 boys is without fail, one of them seems to either wake up, whether it's the youngest one, Hudson, that just kind of wakes up a little bit crying, but just needs kind of like a binky or something to go back to sleep. Mm-hmm. That or Riley, now that he's always been a climber, so he can climb out of the crib no problem now. So most mornings he's just like comes walking in our room, which has been a little bit too early lately.
What time is that?
Yeah, so between 4:30 a.m.
and 5:30.
Okay.
Which normally a couple months ago, Riley was good till 6, but now he changed his mind. So,
so kinda, I'd say we're in the trenches right now. Yeah. So I'll give it to you. So yeah, 4:30 and 5:30, one of the boys is inevitably up. The night before, Ben and I usually talked about who is getting up in the morning. So let's say Ben gets up, and then whichever son is up, you go get their drink. So if Hudson got up first, you go make his bottle, which is formula. If Riley got up first, you go pour a cup of whole milk. Mm-hmm. And then
you have a couple hours of just, yeah, getting them fed, changing diapers. They are like a pretty good tag team because Riley runs all over the place and Hudson just follows him around. But then Hudson sometimes chooses not to follow. So they can be like all over the place.
It's the morning pandemonium.
Yeah, it's a little bit wild. So you try to hold off putting on like a cartoon for a little bit. Sometimes it mellows Riley out, but not always.
Normally a cartoon goes on probably maybe 6:30 or 7. Then that gives one of us a chance to either eat. Ben does a bowl of cereal in the morning. I usually do a picky bar or a bowl of cereal. One of us brews some coffee. I usually try to carry my coffee throughout the house, which is super dangerous, and Ben hates it because we're usually chasing the boys, but I'm like, I got to get my coffee in. And then depending on if they're both going to daycare that day, again, one of us will have decided who is going to take the boys to daycare, and then the other person might go to practice because they meet 6 days a week, anywhere from 8:30 to 9 a.m., and it just depends on if one of us has a workout, one of us has an easy run.
Yeah, on a day-to-day, it's just a lot of switching off. Mm-hmm. Like if we have the luxury of when both of them can go to daycare, which is Monday, Wednesday, Friday, hence doing this on one of those days, then yeah, we kind of get a little bit of the day to get our own stuff done. But the days that they're home, it's switching off. One person will go run, the other will come back, and then we have them on a similar nap schedule. So at least from like 1 to 3 most days, they're both asleep. So that becomes like the quiet hour, which we usually end up just taking a nap ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then there tends to be like kind of the witching hour in the evening between 5:30, 7:30. That's kind of their dinner and getting them down. And some nights they're perfect angels, and others it's just like a few meltdowns mixed in there. They don't want to eat this and that. Maybe a fall and a bump on a head that puts them in a bad mood. But we stick to their schedule like as strictly as we can because it helps our lives out. So like clockwork, we put Hudson down between 6:30 and 7 and then Riley down between 7:30 and 8. And then we tend to eat dinner once they're down so that we can actually enjoy one meal together and plan the next day.
And then to back up, like we did our training in the morning. And then if they're both at daycare, like you said, we'll nap. We're working on our online coaching business during the day, answering emails. We might have chiropractic or massages. And then second run, strength and conditioning. So obviously full-time day. And then Ben usually makes dinner. And then we have about 30 to 45 minutes, maybe of free time before we try to be in bed by like 9:30.
It is a busy day and really interesting to learn about. And
this happens all again.
Well, you handle it very well, and that sounds great. It's great that you kind of like you said, to kind of tag team it and pass it off, taking turns. So that it seems like it works really well. And you mentioned briefly there about running your coaching, running with the Bruces. So do you want to kind of tell us a bit about what that is for anyone listening?
Yes, Steph basically 5 or 6 years ago started coaching our super fan from New York, Maggie Smith. And she just kind of tooted Steph's horn because she was running some PRs and qualified for Boston. And it just slowly built. Like, we didn't promote it much. Steph took on a couple people, and then eventually it got to where Steph was like, wow, I can't coach this many people. So I started coaching some of the people. Some of the emails we get about coaching is funny because they really just want the great Seth to coach them. And Seth's like, my husband can do just as good a job. It just kind of grew that way. And then we never really promote a lot because we just feel like we want our athletes to race well. And if your athletes are running well and not necessarily like always running a PR, because we coach plenty of moms now that are coming back after kids. So they have a whole new set of PRs because their PRs from when they were 22 are going to be different than when now they're 42 with four kids. So just kind of getting them through the journey and everything themselves. And we've just kind of built like a lot of friends and we feel connected to the people we've coached, and whether we coach them still now or we coach them for 6 months, it's great to just have that interaction through social media and following along. And that's kind of where it is. And now we've gotten to a point where we have a summer camp, an adult summer camp to come live and train with the pros in Flagstaff. So,
cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. We just felt like, you know, we know running is our primary profession and ultimately that's our goal. But at the end of the day, we felt like it was kind of a disservice if we didn't share the knowledge that we have gained over the years, and try to help people reach their goals a little bit. And we know that, you know, your running career will eventually be over one day and you don't want to just wake up one day and say, now what? And so we feel like we've kind of just built it organically and it's grown that way. When we're possibly done competing professionally, we'll be able to go, you know, 120% into it and really grow it and expand it more than it is now.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I'll definitely put a link in the show notes for anyone who's interested in learning more. Yeah. No, you don't want that?
Say that because okay. It's growing. No, I'm kidding.
Okay. Anyone listening, this is an exclusive club now. You have to You have to apply. And no, I'm just kidding. What was I going to say? You've thrown me off track. You both, you know, work for this coaching, your own coaching group, but you both train, like you mentioned earlier, you go to practice with Northern Arizona Elite. So for those people who don't know what that is, could you kind of share what it is? You know, obviously you're not coaching there, you're being coached. So kind of a bit about what Ben does and things like that. The other Ben.
Yeah, the other Ben. Yeah. Ben Rosario and his wife Jen started the group basically out of their own pocket at the beginning of 2014. So for the first year of the group, him and his wife were basically funding the whole group themselves. And then the beginning of 2015, Hoka One came on as the title sponsor. We just have grown the group very slowly. We added three kids right out of college last summer: Scott Fauble, Ryan Doner, and Craig Lutz. Scott Fauble, which you've just finished fourth at Olympic trials in the 10,000. And we're in the process of adding a potential couple others that you'll just have to wait to hear on. And so it's just been a group that's really just been climbing up the ranks, I think, quickly. And we've had some great performances with a couple just misses of the Olympic teams, both in the marathon trials and the 10,000 on the track, Kellen Taylor and Matt Yano and Scott Fauble. So we just meet most days of the week, train hard. And Ben Rosario writes all the training, and we put it out there and just try to be what we can.
Mm-hmm. No, and it seems like it's going really well. Actually, Lauren Kleppen, I raced a lot against her in college, so I've got to know her well. So I've kind of been following her journey, and it's nice. She seems very happy there. So that's been kind of cool for me to see as well. Okay, so one other thing I wanted to ask about, Steph, you mentioned it briefly earlier, but you do have celiac disease, or maybe did. I think do still. Oh, yeah. I think I'm getting confused with Hashimoto's, which can go away. So, you know, obviously there's a lot of runners now with this. So could you kind of tell us about the diagnosis, you know, some symptoms you experience for others who may be running and kind of struggling with the same kind of thing, that this could make something click for them, what it was?
Yeah. Ben had mentioned my time in Eugene. I basically was just experiencing probably a year and a half where I wasn't recovering very well from running. I felt off. I had headaches. I would wake up almost feeling like hungover on some days. And I was just eating, every kind of food there was, but I couldn't make any correlation between what I was eating and how I was feeling. And honestly, in 2009, there weren't that many discussions about food allergies at the time. I know people had them, but they just weren't at the forefront. And so I was seeing a chiropractor to just get treatment for like all the muscle weaknesses and imbalances and scar tissue. But every time I would get treatment, like something would just come back 2 weeks later. I'm like, I don't understand why I'm not recovering. My iron levels were super low. And so he suggested seeing a naturopath who is a little different outside of Western medicine. And the naturopath just said, why don't we take a look at your diet? And that was the first time someone had dived in. So he asked me if I had heard of an elimination diet, and I hadn't. So you basically take away different food groups, and then you reintroduce them one at a time to see if they have an effect. And when I first took everything out, I mean, I felt awful because you take out gluten, dairy, eggs, soy, sugar. I mean, and ketchup has sugar in it. So it got so like minute that we were going through all these different foods that my energy was just really low. Like I didn't even want to get out of bed or get off the couch. But then what happened drastically within like 2 to 3 weeks, I actually started to feel better. And I was like, crap, that means something I'm eating is affecting me. What is it? Yeah. And then it was pretty easy. We brought back in gluten and I felt pretty bad right away. And then we brought Darian and I kind of had like a little reaction, but not as much. But gluten, it was pretty overwhelming. And then he suggested a couple blood tests to do. And I actually did a stool test, which mm-hmm. not a lot of people do, but I felt like that was really accurate because that's basically what's in your intestines is going right through. And just some of the levels that they tested there, I won't go into the different terms, but basically that just diagnose me. Some people go for like colonoscopies and endoscopies to get the gold standard, but it was enough for me that I'm like, well, I took it out of my diet and it dramatically changed how I felt, how I recovered. And within mm-hmm. months, I was like a new person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really strange too, because when you're through it, going through it, like we didn't know anything. And now when we look back at like just pictures of Steph, like she always had like kind of swollen, like sunken eyes and just like, just looked tired and just sort of like really weathered. And kind of once you figure it all out, just kind of like a glow came back to just, you could feel like her better, but it was one of those things you didn't notice it until it was gone. So yeah, it was really interesting to look back and you could just like, wow, just looks different in her face. And it was just, yeah, it was just the gluten.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know. Always the way. So do you think now then, as it's, you know, people are more aware of it and kind of there's more diagnosis, more options for food and stuff, do you think you would have kind of figured it out a bit quicker had you been kind of going through this now?
I might have. I mean, I'm just someone that never really settles for just what is. Mm-hmm. So if I'm like not feeling well, I'm going to go get it checked out. I just don't accept that like you should feel fatigued all the time. Yeah. I've never rolled that way in my life and in my running. I always feel like there's an answer. However, what I think the industry is doing and a little harmful these days is just thinking that people are using it as a fad. And yes, I do not think people who don't have any problems have to eat gluten-free. It's not necessarily healthier. Honestly, you could get cakes and muffins and all different foods that are gluten-free. But my biggest thing is if you take it out and you do feel better, keep it out. You don't necessarily have to go through and get all the testing, but if you feel better and notice the difference, why not have it?
Yeah. No, you know? That's very true. And that's actually something I was kind of wondering about, that it does seem in a way, like you said, it is kind of a fad and, you know, everyone kind of wants to try it just to kind of see. But yeah, maybe try it, but you don't necessarily have to, like you said, you don't have to feel better. And I know when I did actually try it maybe 3 or 4 years ago, and the things like cookies are actually a lot of the time, like if you use almond flour or something, you know, they're way more calorie dense and things like that. Yeah, so people think, oh, I'm going to lose weight, but it isn't necessarily the case. And would you
pick up a loaf of gluten-free bread? That thing is dense.
Yeah. So speaking of products, so, you know, this was part of the reason you kind of worked with Lauren Fleshman and Jesse Thomas to come up with Picky Bars, which you did say you often have in the mornings. So for anyone who hasn't, you know, heard of them or seen them in Trader Joe's, which by the way, congrats for that.
Thank you.
What are Picky Bars and, you know, how did the kind of idea come up with that?
Well, ironically, I didn't know I had celiac when Lauren was first creating them. She actually just was creating them because Jesse was, he was like starting to enter into, he wanted to be a professional triathlete, and she just said he had really bad gas from like the gluten he was eating. So she's like, I just felt like there was a gap and a hole in the energy bar industry, that there wasn't ingredients that you could pronounce and there weren't real food. You know, there were just so many different like fillers.
And it's like a mash of like stuff. You're like, I don't even know what this is.
Hydro, sodium, phosphate. Yeah, all that stuff. She's like, so I just wanted real food ingredients, ones that I could pronounce, ones that taste good and that met your needs, you know, with a carb to protein ratio, all that kind of stuff. And so she just was like tinkering around with recipes in her kitchen. And we had just got to know each other via cross training. Ironically, we were both hurt. So she invited me over and was like, hey, do you want to help me make these bars? And so I'm like, sure. So we kind of just joked that like we got our hands messy in this goo and we started sharing our life stories and goals and dreams. And mm-hmm. at the time I was like, I want to go to the Olympics. And she's like, cool. Like, what have you run for 5K? Not like that. I'm like, oh, you know, like 16, 12. And she's like, awesome. I run 14:58. I'm like, okay. So I guess probably going. But it was just so cool how she was so accepting of how big my dreams were and how I was such this little person that was like, you're not ever going to make the Olympics. But she was a legitimate contender. And then she happened to have the misfortune of getting hurt right before the 08 trials. Yeah. And so I think that combination of us just looking for something to distract ourselves while we were injured turned into making the bars for the community. We had a community run group that we brought them the Picky Bars and they tried them. They were like, these are great. And people were like, you should sell these. And one day we just were like, well, how do you turn an energy food bar business, like, how do you start one in your kitchen? And so she was like, just Google it. So she Googled it. And honestly, it just had like the steps of what to do. And it was like, first, come up with a business plan. We're like, ooh, Jesse, we should talk to him about that. Like, second, get your kitchen certified. And so honestly, Lauren went into looking about certification. We asked Jesse if he would help us write a plan. He wasn't super stoked about the idea. Understandable. We didn't really have a lot of background for him to go off. But yeah, we just had this silly belief and it kind of worked out.
Yeah. Now look at it. And yeah, if anyone didn't catch that earlier, it has actually, I mean, they are in a lot of places now, but Trader Joe's is the most recent one to kind of bring it in, which is really, really cool. And do you have any, so there's no like serious plans for like future products? Do you kind of making other kind of things, or is it just kind of a side thing that, you know, you do for fun?
Yeah, we had talked about doing other products. You know, Jesse and Lauren primarily run it now in Bend, Oregon. And we have a team, a picky team out there who basically do everything. And yeah, we talked about doing different products. But I think over the last few years, the biggest focus has been they've wanted to grow the Picky Club, which is our subscription based, where people can order monthly increments of bars and it just shows up right to your doorstep, which is really cool because then you don't have to think about, oh, am I out? You know, they're coming, you know, on the 15th of the month or the 22nd, mm-hmm. whatever date that is. And then what kind of grew from there is we started to find out people who didn't know each other were like recognize each other in airports or somewhere. And they're like, hey, cool. Picky Bars. And then that created an idea for our newest thing, which is hashtag life points. And that was basically like Lauren, Jesse, and I wanted to pursue our professional athletic careers, but we also had Picky Bars growing. And so we wanted people to realize you could go after your dreams, whatever they may be. You know, they don't have to be these exciting grandeur, but just go 100% into them. And so this life points was like, just live the life that you want to live and be proud of that and kind of own that. And then that turned into putting different customers who were sharing all their stories onto our wrappers. Then every couple months they change the wrapper and the customers of Picky Bars are actually on the wrappers.
That's so cool. And yeah, I'd seen that, but I didn't know the reasoning behind that. So that's awesome. What a great idea. And, you know, way to be involved. And anyone listening, you know, sign up for the Picky subscription. And then, you know, you can be one of the future ones. So that's really cool.
Well, they change the wrappers every so often too. So mm-hmm. it's a cycle through. So
a lot of options.
Yeah, definitely. Awesome. I did want to ask you about your blog, but I know we're kind of running low on time here. So I'm just going to tell everyone to go check out the blog. There are a lot of stories on there. You know, as you've kind of seen both of them today, they're very real, very honest. There's a recent one Steph did, which made me laugh about what you think about during a 10K. And yours were a lot more positive than mine. My thoughts are definitely more negative during a 10K. But it's pretty cool to read. So I would go say it, but say to see it. And you can do that at runnersconnect.net/RC120. I'll put the link in there. And then, so just a few more questions I have before the final kick round, which, or one question for each of you. I might throw you off here, but as you are the first couple I've had on here, Ben, what are you most proud of Steph for? Or Steph, if you want to start, you can do the other way around.
I think like I knew Steph before kids, and then like after it really becomes like a new journey in your life. And I was prepared for childbirth, but Riley was a fighter and he did not want to come out. So I'd never seen, like, I'd seen her run races, but to see her push through her limits to have him was pretty prideful. And then to have another kid right after that, a little closer than we had planned. And then to see her come back after all that and very like meticulously and take care of all of her time management and to come back at Stanford and run Olympic trial or Olympic standard was a pretty proud moment. So I guess like all of that combined in one, like a big event of having two kids, but then coming back and still showing that she could get back to even better than she was before was probably one of my prouder moments as a husband.
Yeah, so true and incredibly inspiring as you were, Steph, and probably nice to hear. And I hope I haven't got you teary there. It seems like you're a little bit. Okay, and then Steph, what about Ben?
I mean, he kind of said it all, because you'd go back and be like, we've known each other from the beginning. You want to always look at the running accomplishments, but honestly, being a dad, he's like the best dad any wife or mom could ever ask for. Yeah. And my dad died when I was 18. And so he never got to meet Ben, and he obviously never got to meet my kids. And so I just know that it's really cool to think almost like maybe I got lucky and he sent Ben to be probably the greatest dad that exists on this earth. So Ben's greatest accomplishment is being a dad.
Oh, no, that's so sweet. And I bet you everyone listening right now is smiling. And if you're running along listening to this podcast, I hope people are driving by you wondering what you're doing.
I need Papa alert.
No, it's lovely to hear. So just got the final kick round, which we will get to right after a word from our sponsor.
Most of us are now in the middle of summer. That means the temperatures have soared and running becomes a little more difficult. We dream of those cool fall mornings and remind ourselves that those tough days now will pay off big time later, or so we hope. I find a distraction helps a lot, and Jabra Pulse is just what you need. The wireless sweatproof earbuds make it nice and easy to listen to podcasts or music through Bluetooth on those days we are on board the struggle bus. Runners Connect listeners can get exclusive offers and enter to win a free Jabra Pulse headset by signing up at jabra.com/runnersconnect. That's jabra.com/runnersconnect to start your journey, or buy the Jabra Pulse at your local Best Buy. Jabra, this is where it starts.
Okay, we're back. And so I just have five little questions for you. You can either both answer them, or you could, do one, tag team it, one each. So I think, Steph, you did know them ahead of time. I'm not sure, Ben, if you do know them. But if you, one of you could, or both of you could give us the greatest advice you've ever received.
It's from a movie.
No. Titanic.
It's Van Wilder. I don't know this.
Okay.
Don't take life so seriously, or you never get out alive.
No one ever gets out alive.
No one ever gets out alive.
That's cool. Is that your favorite too?
It's probably not his. I'm just like a huge movie buff. Oh. So honestly, I like live my life through quotes of movies.
That's good. And okay, should we go on to the next one? Well, or do you have anything on it?
We'll test the, like, me picking like a greatest or favorite is probably like the hardest thing ever. So I remember my dad is like, at one point, like after a bad race, saying like, sort of just like, for good or bad, get over it, because like you can think about the race forever, but you'll never get it back. So use what you lost there and try to use it for the next one. So you can't ever get back what's already happened. You can only change what's about to.
Very helpful. Great. Awesome. Okay. Favorite running book or blog other than your own? I think I might know what yours is.
Really? But. Oh, interesting.
Oh, maybe not.
I'm not a big like running book reader. I feel kind of embarrassed to say mm-hmm. that, but I've read a few like running books over the years, but not huge. So I'm just going to go with blog. And that one's easy because she's like one of my best friends. I keep talking about her this whole podcast, but it's Lauren. Yeah, it's Lauren yeah. Fleshman. To ask Lauren Fleshman, because I was there mm-hmm. also in the beginning when she started it and when she came up with the idea that like, what if people wanted to ask pros questions? And it was like, duh, asklaurenfleshman.com.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great website. And Ben, do you have one that you go to all the time?
Yeah, not too much. I mean, I've read a few of the running books. Unfortunately, we don't get much of a chance to read. When they're older, maybe I'll go through them all.
Yeah.
So you can say that maybe the Northern Arizona Elite, because it's not technically your own, but it's...
Yeah, because you get a little taste of everything, because you get people that like to write quirks and others like to write blogs that are like 100% splits in training. So you get a little bit of everything at the NAZ blog. So.
Cool. Okay, cool. What would you like to tell a new runner if one of you
was going to take that one?
Okay.
For a new runner, I always say to don't try to go run like 40 minutes right away. If you think about like any other sport or any type of physical activity, running, for most people, they say it's hard if they don't do it because it's not natural to just go out and run for an hour. So start with like small bits of running a few minutes at a time with walk breaks. And then eventually take the walk breaks to less and less and less. So I think that's a big thing to realize. You're starting from ground zero. So don't expect yourself to go run a half marathon this weekend. Start small and just week by week up things, a minute here, a minute there, a mile there. And then with even in a year, you can look back and be like, wow, come a long ways. Yeah. So.
Yep. No, it's amazing to see how the body adapts. So definitely great advice there. What is a pre-race meal for both of you? You can either do just before the race or the night before. It's up to you.
Well, I do picky bars like the morning of. That's just pretty easy. We're both pretty flexible. We just try to have the same foods that we always eat. So some sort of meat.
Steph mentioned earlier, she does picky bars and like a bowl of cereal in the morning, and I usually just do cereal. So that if we're running like a morning road race, we'll do that. Maybe I'll do oatmeal if I'm traveling and I can't just get like cold cereal. The night before the race, if I'm traveling, I actually go to Chipotle quite a bit just because
interesting.
I know a lot of people wouldn't think that, but it's just simple kind of balanced burrito. And
I would do that as a bowl since I can't have the burrito because like I said, we just try to do a carb, which is rice, some sort of meat, and then beans and guacamole,
whatever.
Yeah.
Awesome. Cool.
I even drink a Coke with it. So
yeah.
Well, there you go. Anyone listening, see. You mean elite runners don't just eat salad and vegetables all day long?
Crazy.
No, it's people who listen a lot know that I definitely don't follow that plan either. Okay, and finally, a favorite running product that you use? Are you Garmin addicts?
I don't really use many products seriously other than my shoes. I have probably like foam roll the least of most runners up. I just kind of let myself go. So probably just my running shoes.
And which ones are they?
We all run all my stuff in my easy runs in the Bondi, but my favorite shoe probably is the Hoka Tracer for a lot of road racing. It's just, it's only been out for about a year and it's pretty sweet.
I'm making the prediction that that's the next great marathoning shoe, the Hoka Tracer. Okay. I really think it's going to become the next big thing.
Cool. Do you run in those as well?
Yes, I do. Cool. I do anywhere from like 10K road race all the way up to, I haven't raced a marathon yet, but I've run, 15Ks. I run long steady states in them. And I plan on racing the marathon in them, hopefully. Okay.
Well, we'll see if your prediction comes true. Okay. Anyway, I'll put a link to those in the show notes. Cool. Well, both of you, thank you so much for your time. And I really appreciate this. I know people have got a lot out of this. So thanks for coming on and giving us some of your time, even with that crazy schedule. So we look forward to following you in the future. What would be the best way for people to keep up to date with you?
Probably our Instagram account.
Okay.
Ben is...
Yeah, mine's bbjammin15.
Okay, I'll put a link as well.
Mine is Steph Rothstein. That's my maiden name. I probably need to change that to Bruce. Yeah, and then our website, stephanbenbruce.com.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for tuning in today. I hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did. I really appreciate your understanding with my shuffling around of episodes this week, but we will be back to regular scheduling next week. Now, can I ask you a favor, please? If you've been enjoying these podcast episodes, could you share the podcast with your friends and family? I put my whole heart into making these episodes the absolute best they can be, and although I realize they're not perfect, especially when you compare them to some of the bigger companies who can kind of afford to have the, you know, the office set up, the recording studio, I guess, set up. I know this isn't perfect, but I'm trying to make it the best I can. And the best way you can help me is to share this podcast if you've enjoyed it or any other episodes on your Facebook, your Twitter, your blog, or wherever else you like to hang out. The more people I can get listening to the episode, the more I can reach out to the bigger guests and get them on the show. Although, of course, don't worry, I'm still going to continue to bring on inspirational runners from everyday life, especially as you guys inspire me just as much as anyone else. Almost every guest I've had on the show is a recommendation from one of you, so I want to thank you for your suggestions and helping to make this podcast the best it can be. If you do have anyone you would like me to interview or a particular area you would like me to kind of find a guest to suit, you can email me tina@runnersconnect.net anytime and I will get back to you. So next week we're going to be talking to Dirk Friel, who is the founder of Training Peaks. Many of you know Training Peaks, and Dirk is someone I've been trying to bring on the show for a while now. So you guys, with your downloads, help me to finally get his attention so I can bring him on. So until then, I hope you have a great week.